Isn't this a sport show?
The last few days I've worn lobster shorts, purple pants, and today it's jorts and the space hoodie.
Almost entirely.
Fine. Bleep me. I'm a dope. Durf.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You know, he does it kind of like a dead fish.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
One thing I haven't yet talked about is the fact that Nazis are back.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
Feel free to come in and say, listen, big stupid idiot. That doesn't make any damn sense.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Woo! Sorry, I've been holding my breath since 6 o'clock on Friday. It's been a very long weekend. Just so much happened in the last 48 hours or so. I have the pregame jitters for this show because I'm just trying to figure out, okay, how much of this can we actually get through in 2 hours, and what's gonna have to wait until tomorrow? Also, you may have noticed that there was no Last Week On at the beginning of the show. That's on me, not Beards. We're going to play that at the top of the 5 o'clock hour as a nice palate cleanser as we shift gears, because I'm assuming that we're really going to shift gears from the 4 o'clock to the 5 o'clock hour. Because the Chiefs won yesterday, they're 3-0, they're the only undefeated team in the AFC, one of two undefeated teams in the NFL. It's just them and the Falcons. And that's great. And that story is great, and I am excited to talk about the Chiefs being 3-0. And we're going to get to that. We're probably going to spend a full hour of this show on that. But we're not going to start with that. We have to talk about everything that happened in the NFL yesterday and everything that happened in the world the day before. There is so much interesting in what we've seen through the last couple of days. I'm not coming here to preach from a pulpit. For the record, I come here incredibly interested in this dramatic collision between sports and culture. And if you want, sports and politics and culture. But this weekend, we kind of reached that singularity. All of those became one thing for a little while. And because of the politician, not because of the sports getting political, but by the politician getting sports political, if that makes any sense. So if you're not super down to this topic right now, I ask that you give me one segment, give it 10 minutes. Give this conversation 10 minutes, and if you want to check out, fine. The main thing I'm going to talk about here is the response to what Donald Trump said and the response to the response. That's going to be the main crux of it. That's not going to be inherently political. I don't think that if you're a right-winger, you're going to hate what I have to say about the owners any more than I think if you're a left-winger, you're going to hate it. We're going to talk about the owners and the statements that came after Trump's statements in the bulk of this segment. So I ask that you stick with it. Many of you won't, I'm sure, but I ask that you do. I would appreciate it. And as always, if you've got something to say, the Facebook live stream is up on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page. You can comment there. I will happily field questions, comments, concerns, whatever. We'll get to that, in the next segment after this. So if you're interested in that, at JB Briscoe on Twitter, ESPN Kansas City Facebook page. But there is so much to talk about here. And we have to lay down some sort of ground rules, I feel like. Because there are so many landmines planted all around this. So listen, just to give me a segment here, if you will. Decide if you love me or hate me or have generally no opinion on what I've said or done. Deal? Deal. I think before we can have this conversation with any sort of intellectual honesty, we have to clarify a few things. The protests, both of Colin Kaepernick and of huge portions of the NFL yesterday, including a bunch of Chiefs, is not about the flag. And it's never been about the flag or a song or the military. That's just simply true if you've asked the players. It's been about the players using their most visible platform to ask people to look racial injustice in the face. So when Kaepernick sat out for the first time, or just sat down for the first time, He said this was in no way a protest of or against the military. It was in no way an act of disrespect towards soldiers. In fact, he shifted from sitting during the anthem to kneeling during it because of a meeting he had with some military members who suggested that taking a knee would be the more respectful posture for him to take while still obviously getting his message across. I think that's important. The way we talk about whatever comes next has to be backed up by that. Also, more artfully and more concisely, somebody on Twitter said thinking that NFL players are protesting the flag is like thinking that Rosa Parks was protesting public transportation. The medium here is not as important as the cause, even though the medium has become more discussable. Just something to keep in mind so we can get to the actual issues that are new from this weekend. So Donald Trump said a thing at a rally in Alabama. In case you missed it, here's what he said. Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, he's fired. You know, some owner's going to do that. He's going to say, that guy disrespects our flag, he's fired. And that owner, they don't know it. They don't know it. They're friends of mine, many of them. They don't know it. They'll be the most popular person for a week. They'll be the most popular person in the country. I've seen that take from 1,000 people on Twitter. I've heard that from a few people in my family. Seeing it from the president is a little bit jarring. And that's what set off everything else that happened this week. It was because of that. Of that statement. And it's kind of shocking, even with this president, it's kind of shocking to hear that the president would advocate for free Americans being fired for exercising their right to peacefully protest injustices in this country in a way that does not impede their ability to do that job, by the way. I know people have issue with doing it at your place of work. It doesn't impede their efforts. So Trump is the one. If you're sick of this conversation, you have to blame the president. Sorry, it's what it is. Because Trump effectively kicked in the door on the NFL. The protests were largely lying down. They were largely less discussed, largely put onto the back burner in the news cycle. Then Trump, as I think it was Dan Lebatard who put it this way, Trump brought the fight to the playground. Sports are the playground. The bully came, picked on a couple of kids. The metaphor devolves eventually, but I hope you understand. The response to that is all very interesting, and maybe we'll unpack more of that later. I don't know. But the thing that stuck with me through the games yesterday and then through last night and then through this morning and through this afternoon all the way to now, the thing that stuck with me most was what happened next. Those comments from the president inspired calls for unity. Teams locking arms or staying in the locker room during the national anthem. With a few exceptions, with very few exceptions, owners sent out toothless statements saying that they are boldly and staunchly anti-hatred and pro-unity. This very brave thing of them to say. And that was the word and the message of the day yesterday, unity. But that has a major problem. Almost all of the owners that made statements yesterday never said what they were unified for or were unified against. This is a gross metaphor, but it fits. So to all the NFL owners currently listening, don't take this one to heart, but do. This weekend, the NFL, Roger Goodell, and the NFL owners moved like cockroaches whenever the light comes on. And it's not because they're these wretched, unkillable bugs. I've met Clark Hunt one time now. He was very nice. I really liked meeting Clark Hunt. He answered my questions. Well, by the way, nothing but respect for the Clark Hunt that I've interacted with. I'm not calling NFL owners cockroaches. I'm saying that this weekend, they moved like cockroaches. Because when the light came on, as it did on Saturday and Sunday, they all scattered. They ran in 32 different directions. Because they were so they were so desperate to appear to be moving that they never stopped to decide what they were running from or what they were running to. We saw movement from the NFL and the owners this weekend, and that tricked a lot of us. It got me for a little while. We got movement from Mike Tomlin. We got movement from a couple of head coaches and a ton of owners. We got movement, eventually, from Clark Hunt. But it tricked us, because it was just shallow, scared movement in no direction. Calls for unity, unified for nothing, unified against nothing. That is not a call for unity. You can't have a rallying cry to nothing. It was just, we need to be more unified. But it doesn't work. Those calls were not good enough. They're baseless. They're meritless. Why should we take those seriously? Many came out to defend the right to free speech when that has never been the point. Colin Kaepernick wasn't taking a knee during the national anthem to draw attention to a lack of free speech being allowed in the country. That's silly. Obviously, at least whenever he started, we were doing a pretty good job of that in America. He took the knee to bring light to police officers unjustly killing unarmed black citizens in this country and then not being held accountable for those killings at an alarmingly high rate. That's what it was about. We didn't hear a lot of that in the statements that were made yesterday. And examine when the NFL owners spoke up. When did teams start releasing their statements? What was it in response to? It was in response to the president telling them how they should run their business. When he told owners that they should fire the sons of bitches who don't stand for the flag, a symbol that, frankly, I'm not sure the president fully understands very well. Whenever he told owners they should fire those sons of bitches, the owners didn't like that. They don't like being told what to do. They don't like being bossed around. Rich, powerful people don't like being yanked around by other rich, powerful people. So then you get vocal owners. You get owners speaking out against divisiveness. Divisiveness. Donald Trump has spent his short political career being divisive. Colin Kaepernick is divisive. Polar opposites, perhaps. If you want to polarize it, you can do that. But those are both divisive figures, and those are the figures on either end of the spectrum this weekend. There is division here. There are divided ideologies. Some ideologies indicate that injustices in this country are so worth bringing to attention that you have to do it on the biggest possible stage that you can find, even whenever you know that people will misinterpret your message. Some ideologies would indicate that there's nothing more important than the symbolism and the undivided allegiances that you must show to your country. But those are incompatible ideologies. Those don't work together. Calling for a unity of those ideologies is so toothless. It's just the light coming on, and you don't want to look dead on the floor. So you move, you run in no particular direction. Also, Shannon Sharp pointed this out extremely well today. He asked, where is the stand of unification against divisiveness been? President Trump has been divisive thoroughly. He's insulted everyone from Ted Cruz's wife to every Mexican-American to a Gold Star family to a war hero and a public servant. Was that not divisive? Was that not worthy of your attention and your discussion of your public calls for unity? Apparently not. And that's why these statements all ring so shallowly. Because it was when Trump told NFL owners how they should use their power, what they should do with their franchises, that's the moment they decided that he had gone too far. And that's not courage. That is, it is cowardice. It is simply cowardice. Because in that moment, you're saying, I'm willing to stand up to bullying whenever it's bullying towards me. But not a moment before. That's what NFL owners did this week. On large scale. The bully told me how to run my team. Will not stand for this. Every other sign of divisiveness, silence. You wait until it hits you before you say anything. I won't applaud that. I will not commend NFL owners for doing that. Also, Shad Khan, Robert Kraft, Daniel Snyder, Bob McNair, Stan Kroenke, the Glazers, the Johnsons, Jerry Jones, all who donated money to Trump's inauguration can all keep their statements. Their statements of feigned shock and horror at Trump being crass and aggressive. Because they all saw that before. And they donated money to that demeanor. They just don't enjoy it from the other side of the transaction. By the way, a couple of those teams that I just mentioned, owned by those people, would have better football teams if they gave half a damn about Colin Kaepernick's right to free speech. Half of that, as much as they cared about the president telling them how to run their organization. It all rang hollow yesterday. Sam Mellinger did a really good piece on this. Lots of people have had good things to say. We're going to hear from other smart pontificators later. Talk about the actual issue. Beard, you've sort of cowered up to the mic a couple of times.
I just want to point out just one funny thing from yesterday.
Sure, please.
Of all of the people that you mentioned having their, quote, fake shows of supportiveness or whatever with the players, Dan Snyder linking arms with his players was the greatest visual image I've had in a long time.
It really was a beautiful picture.
And now the owner of the Washington Redskins locking arms with his teammates.
Yeah. Now there's a level of what's the inverse of self-awareness? Of self-ignorance. There's a level of self-ignorance that it must take to be Dan Snyder. Also, at one point, Beards hopped in my ear and said, careful with that one word that's kind of a curse. I've heard lots of people say that word on the station behind us.
But they have more power than you do?
That's fine. I just don't think it's like an FCC thing. I'm literally only doing it while quoting the president. Here's my pledge on this. Here's my pledge on the rest of this show for all of time. At least for today. You'll have to do today. I don't know where I'm going to be, you know, a year from now. But for today's entire show, I will only curse if I'm directly quoting the president.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
You aren't going to get another political discussion like yesterday, are you? Maybe I will. Don't tip.
With Joshua Briscoe.
He'll do it, man. He's crazy.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the show, Almost Entirely Sports. Which is something that apparently a caller during the break didn't realize what the show was called. That's all right. Like, throughout the life of this show, we've done a surprising amount of sports. Today, Donald Trump brought politics to our sports. He came to the playground. Yesterday, the playground was covered in politics. It was all over the place. So we're going to talk about it.
It's sports. It's just not sports game analysis.
Right, yeah. Like, welcome to Almost Entirely X's and O's Breakdown. I'm your host, boring former NFL player. That's not the show. And by the way, that show exists all over the place. Some people doing it very well. Like, Seth Kaiser, who does like 1,000 things, like he's like a pastor and a lawyer and a film analyst. He doesn't tweet about politics, really. He does brilliant, brilliant film breakdown. He's available. He exists. Let's go ahead and do a quick dive into the Facebook comment section. My mom told me to stop cursing. I'm just quoting the president. I'm quoting the president. Next segment, I'm going to read the Emancipation Proclamation, beginning to end, and it'll just be the exact same thing. Tweet the president, not me. Micah comes in and says, stop it with Kaepernick. He was also wearing pig cop socks. He lost the respect. Players are speaking about this much better now. Kaepernick lost my respect with his lack of self-awareness. Michael Bennett and others have a better message. All right, well, listen, here's the thing, though. Kaepernick was first, and that matters. And Kaepernick is still unemployed, and that matters. Also, the socks have haunted him forever. It's been a very good place for people who don't want to listen to him to jump in and devalue his entire message. He's a flawed messenger. That's fair. Socks are a mistake. Also, though, can you kind of get it? Can you kind of put yourself in his shoes for long enough to theorize why he may have a terrible perception of the police? I'm not saying that the socks are an accurate reflection. Certainly not in my life. I've had nothing but good interactions with police. Usually, like, your headlight is out. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I will fix it. And they're like, okay. One night, I got pulled over twice in the same night in two different cities because of the same one out headlight. I also don't know anybody who was killed by police. I don't have the skin tone that is so often connected to groups of people that end up getting shot after their headlight goes out. So I saw the sock thing. I was like, oh, man, that's really dumb. And it still is. But I think if you give yourself a little bit of a transportation into his mindset, into his reality, how he's experienced everything, how he has experienced police violence towards African-Americans in this country, like, you also can, I think you can kind of get it. You don't have to endorse it in any way whatsoever. I'm not. Shouldn't have had those. Shouldn't have worn them. That was dumb. But I think that if you're actually intellectually honest with yourself, if you're actually interested in getting into this conversation, you have to do a little bit of, what about that person's shoes? I try to do it with the military all the time. Like, the Steelers, Alejandro Villanueva yesterday, the Steelers were going to stay in the locker room throughout the national anthem. Villanueva was, an Army Ranger. Like, he served in the Army. And so he came out and stood for the anthem, hand over his heart. He was the only Steeler on the field. I tried to put myself in his shoes. Now, I do think you have to ask a very interesting question of, is it cool for a guy to break ranks after Mike Tomlin said before the game, the whole team, with 100% participation, as he put it, with 100% participation, was going to stay in the locker room? Villanueva was the exception there. I fully understand why he would want to be out there for the anthem. Try to put myself in those shoes. I think Mike Tomlin would be annoyed. I also don't blame Villanueva for doing that. Similarly to Kaepernick, he's going to face a bunch of questioning for singling himself out as the first person to do that thing. It's a more popular thing for him to do because other players have been standing for the anthem for a while. Although only since 2009. This wasn't even a thing until 2009. Players would stay in the locker room until then, just in case you didn't know. So I think that's interesting. We haven't really talked about the actual issue very much here, though. We touched on it, I guess, just a second there. But I've seen lots of people lean on the belief that the real problem here, that the only problem here, is what they believe to be the protesting at work being inappropriate. It's at their job. And again, you've got to do a little bit of, well, what's it like from this perspective? Because if you think that protesting before your work begins, mind you, at your place of employment, perhaps, but no one stopped and knelt at the 50 during a play or anything. That hasn't happened yet. Yet, it totally could. But if you think that doing it on the clock, if you think that doing it on the clock is inappropriate, you've surely must think that police officers killing unarmed black people while on the clock is also inappropriate, right? And, like, more inappropriate? The justice system acquitting an alarming number of those officers, that's inappropriate. I would assume you would believe. Calling athletes in the posture of a silent, peaceful protest, sons of bleeps, is inappropriate. Donald Trump was at work when he did. He was at a rally, a campaign rally, as the president. That's inappropriate. How on earth do you this? How do you decide what is worthy of your rage and your condemnation? Protest while you're at work. Whoa! Cut him. Trump calling them all SOBs while at work. Meh. He's a wild card. He's a crazy dude. Police officers unjustly killing people while at work. Oh! Don't break the law. Don't break the law. Don't get killed. Okay. Your call, I guess, on what angers you, what fills you with a righteous passion. That's it's an interesting place to plant your flag. Pun intended. Boom. The pun wasn't intended at first, but I was going to say it, and then I realized before I said it. All right, let's get smarter. Here are a bunch of things that smart people have said about the anthem and the protest. Beards, do you have all the sound that we talked about earlier? We'll probably go to Chris Cluey first whenever we get to that. It'll be a minute. Here's smart things smart people said about the anthem and the protests. Terrence Knighton had a super interesting tweet, former defensive tackle, I think for Washington in Denver. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. Former defensive tackle, Pot Roast was his nickname. He tweeted and asked, "What if players were taking a knee for all the veterans who are homeless and on the street with nothing to show for their duty?" And I thought that was a genuinely very interesting question. Because it goes to such an interesting place. It makes you differentiate between the value of the cause and the medium that the cause is projected through. What if J.J. Watt took a knee during the anthem because Puerto Rico's not getting the assistance it needs after the hurricanes? Is that going to have the same rageful response? Now, keeping it in line with military equivalency makes that whole conversation easier. Yeah, what if somebody took a knee to say, hey, you know what? Got to be a white player too. Just, it's going to have to be. We can make a J.J. Watt again. What if J.J. Watt takes a knee and says, you know what? I'm doing this during the anthem because I want to draw attention. I guess it can't be a knee. It has to be something else. I'm doing a handstand during the anthem because I want to draw attention to the fact that we have tons of homeless veterans in this country. And I want to draw attention to that and try to raise money for that. And have our government be better about it. All right, cool. Like, it's a good cause. Everybody's there with the cause. It's too late to do it during the anthem. That's been taken. It's being used already. That time slot is full. Because Kaepernick had the guts to do it first, frankly. But I thought that was an interesting question. Pablo Torre had a very good tweet. He said, next time someone complains about rich athletes protesting racial inequality, ask yourself how often we listen to the voices of the poor. And this is something else that comes up all the time. I was listening to something on the way in here today where someone said, oh, they got all these rich, entitled athletes out here protesting, you know, against police that are never going to harm them in their lives. It's not always about them. Maybe everyone's not as selfish as you are. I don't know. I don't know why you would immediately assume that. I think it's a pretty clear, and maybe this is just my ideology, my worldview, whatever. I think it's a pretty clear part of the duty of the rich and the powerful and the herd to speak out on behalf of the poor and the powerless and the silent. I think that makes sense. I think that's a really terrible argument. Say, oh, they have money. They shouldn't do this. That's silly. Bumani Jones had a really interesting perspective that I've seen ringing true largely from what I've encounter. He said, "What's happened is a discussion of the mistreatment of black people has been turned into one of hurt white feelings over the anthem." And yesterday, with all the statements, was about Trump disparaging the league run by mostly white owners and how it hurt their feelings. It's really interesting. Starts off about a protest about black injustice. We end up at a place today talking about white hurt feelings. The race element exists here. It's real and obvious. Please don't pretend like it's not. I just think it's really interesting that this conversation has moved so much and so far that now it's about protecting the flag much more from protesters. It's more protecting the flag from protests than it is about protecting unarmed, unjustly killed by the state citizens. That's gotta make you reevaluate a little bit, doesn't it? More interested in protecting the symbol from peaceful protests than protecting real living human beings from lethal violence. Again, that's gonna be your call to make, but I think a lot of people have that one backwards right now. And it's largely because of how the conversation's been steered. Bomani again said we're knee-deep, and the only angles that the general white population is comfortable with is the anthem, the flag, and freedom of speech. When Kaepernick said right out of the gate, hey, for me, it wasn't about any of that. And again, Kaepernick matters because he started the ball moving. Kaepernick said that at the beginning. People have said that at every turn since then. Michael and Martellus Bennett have said, it's not about the military or the anthem or the flag. Freedom of speech gets brought up whenever, again, the largely white population needs something to say, oh, yes, we are unified in this desire to hold on to the First Amendment. You're not saying very much there. Den Lebatard had a tweet. Black man kneels, ask you to not ignore the disrespect of his people. You see only the disrespect of the flag, the song, the land, the military, and you call his mom a bleep. I don't think that's the fault of the hurt. I think that's the fault of the interpreter. Chris Cluey was on CNN, former Vikings punter, and I thought he said a bunch of really interesting stuff here. The first half is going to make a bunch of you uncomfortable. So if you're pissed after the first 20 seconds, wait for the next 20 seconds. Just I don't know, do some good breathing. But here's Chris Cluey on CNN.
Well, I think that the players are trying to resist a would-be fascist dictator. I mean, you look at Trump's responses and you look at the way he talks about these two different issues. It is very clear he expects a slavish devotion to the state above all else, which is a hallmark of fascism. And I really think that we as a country need to examine what his proxies are saying in interviews like this about this is American pride. You know, that's something that you would expect to hear out of Nazi Germany. American pride isn't about standing and not thinking. It's about asking yourself, is the country holding up its end of the social contract? And right now, for many, many black Americans, the country is not holding up its end of the social contract, and something needs to be done.
Isn't that patriotism? Why blindly stand for something when you believe that the people on the other end of the social contract aren't holding up their end of the bargain? I think that's really powerful. I think that's worth discussing. Alex Smith spoke after the game. Said, I find it very alarming. This is the same guy who couldn't condemn violent neo-Nazis, but he's condemning guys that are taking a knee during the national anthem. That matters, man. That matters. And that's not sports going and bringing politics over. It's a president who cares what NFL players think and do. So he brought it over to the playground. So Alex Smith is the guy getting asked questions about it now. That's how that works. Matt Verderam. So by Trump's line of thinking, if you yell Chiefs at the end of the anthem, you should lose your job. It's messed up, but true. You're not respecting the land of the free and the home of the what now? Your football team? It doesn't sound very respectful to the military, the brave. I don't think you should get fired for that. All right, we're going to play Bob Costas, and then we'll take a break. Beards is very neurotic about taking a break. If the third segment's shorter, it's okay. We're gonna go to the Chiefs stuff here in about 15 minutes. But Bob Costas spoke today, and I think he tackles an interesting issue here of the false equivalency and the very, very tight ties we have between the military, the flag, the anthem, all this American symbolism, and also the very essence of patriotism, and it's kind of messed up.
Part of what's happened is that sports and patriotism and the flag have been conflated to such an extent that people can't separate out any nuance. If you go to see Hamilton, which is about the founding of the Republic, no one says, wait a minute, don't raise the curtain until we hear the national anthem. When you went to see Private Ryan, no one said, turn off the projector, Saving Private Ryan. No one said, turn off the projector until we've had the national anthem. It's in sports where this stuff happens. Sometimes movingly, sometimes I'd submit cynically, because wrapping yourself in the flag and honoring the military is something which no one is going to object to. We all respect their sacrifice. We all honor their sacrifice. And yet, what it has come to mean is that the flag is primarily and only about the military. This is no disrespect to the military. It's a huge part of the narrative. But Martin Luther King was a patriot. Susan B. Anthony was a patriot. Dissidents are patriots. School teachers and social workers are patriots. And yet at Yankee Stadium, if we can shift sports, not only do they play the national anthem before the game, but they play God Bless America at the seventh inning stretch 81 times a year at home games. And in every case, they say, please rise as the Yankees honor a military guest. I have no problem with that. I stand every time I'm in the ballpark, no matter what it is, I stand. And I certainly respect the military person they bring out there. But there's never a school teacher. There's never a social worker. Patriotism comes in many forms. And what has happened is that it's been conflated with kind of a bumper sticker kind of flag waving and with the military only, so that people cannot see that in his own way, Colin Kaepernick, however imperfectly, is doing a patriotic thing. And so too are some of these other players.
Again, I think that's super powerful, and I think you have to reexamine what is a patriot to you. What is patriotic to you? Is the only way to be a part of a patriotic aura to be in the military? I don't think that. I think Costas is right. School teachers and social workers and political activists and politicians are also, if not automatically patriots, capable of doing things that are, by definition, patriotic. There's a false equivalency there. There's a weird tie between sports and politics that's always existed by sports and the anthem and the flag, and that's always, in my lifetime as a sports fan, that's been kind of odd but present. But I think you've got to expand what it means to be patriotic. One more tweet, and we'll move on. I thought this one was very biting. It says, the president should not be telling the Washington Redskins to change their name. Our country has far bigger problems. Focus on them, not nonsense. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, that was Donald Trump from 2013.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Beards is just shaking his head on the other side, because I've talked to him about politics today, and he told me that if I say the name James Comey, he's going to turn on national programming and just turn off this entire station. So we're not going to do that.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I think that's fair.
It totally is.
If you say that name, I'm going to start yelling like, danger, danger, or something like that.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Like, every other week, I look back at 2 weeks ago and go, man, remember that was a simpler time? Remember that simpler time of 2 weeks ago? I'm terrified of what's going to happen 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today, like, you can't even guess it. Just crazy stuff starts happening again. Something from the past will come back to life. All right, we're going to probably put a bow on the anthem and protest discussion for today here after this hour, although we do still have to talk about the fact that Donald Trump wants more concussions, I think. That's football enough for the next hour. But I wanted to touch on, like, one more thing. I know a guy called in. I know somebody will hit up the Facebook comments every once in a while and go, hey, man, let's go. Sports. Stick to them. But stick to sports is dead. It is over. It died this weekend. Because of the politicians, not because of the athletes. Because we are at a point now where sports and politics and pop culture are no longer, if they ever were, neatly contained in their own section of, like, those little cafeteria plates that keep your foods from touching. Everything's one big bowl now. Just stacked on top of each other. And the days of the separation are gone. You don't have to like it, but that's how it is. Pop culture icons have been making their political views known for years. Then a pop culture icon with no political experience becomes president. You can't undo that. And at this point, I also still can't wrap my head around the idea that anyone would want to force athletes to stand for the anthem. It's not hyperbolic to say that line of thinking is actually dictatorial. It's like, salute the country under the threat of having your career ended. If that's your mindset, what makes America better than anybody else? I don't get it. You can't say stick to sports anymore. And it'll make you uncomfortable. That'll happen. New perspectives, new ideas, new conversations will make you uncomfortable. But that's what it is now. Sorry if you don't like it. I hope you like it. I hope you like me. What?
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. Previously on Almost Entirely Sports.
Prepare to be disappointed. If this show is ever, like, I was going to say, like, national, I should just say relevant, I will start a campaign to get you to legally change your name.
Baby steps.
Baby steps, for sure.
First, we have to get paid.
He's not elite. Jordan has more rings. LeBron has lost in the finals. He didn't get a ring.
It's all about rings.
It's about the rings! This is not to critique Alex Smith in a new way, because I've just been so thoroughly mauled by Alex Smith in the first 2 weeks that I am merely the corpse of a hater who now slashes at the ankles of Alex Smith as he tramples up my body. Can't be the GOAT unless you have more rings! Like, you will accidentally find nudity on the internet. That happens, like, I don't know, once every 3 times I open a tab.
Weird shirt, lobster shorts.
Right, yes.
Space hoodie.
Pacsun.com.
Naked body.
I'm hoping that what I just said is factual and that your research wasn't bad.
Yeah, me too.
I think the goal at this point is to make this show so easy to find that you have to avoid it on purpose to not end up seeing or hearing part of it.
But of course, we don't want you to avoid it.
Right, yeah, don't avoid it. But if you want to not hear it,
it'll be like a McDonald's. One at every corner.
That's perfect. And also, we're going to kill thousands of people every year by heart disease. What are the safest possible things to say? We're going to devote a month to selling merchandise for this cause. Oh, the military, slam dunk, and breasts. Cancer. I'll say this. I will say this confidently. This world needs more revenge pooping and less gun violence. Amen! Oh, I've never been so right in my life. Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. 99.3 FM, 1510 AM, 1510.com. ESPN Kansas City Facebook Live page. It's all of it, everywhere. Good work, Beards. I think saving last week on until the beginning of this hour ended up being a good call. I was second-guessing it, but now, like, I feel like I have kind of
a new
energy.
We needed a buffer.
The palate cleanser was, I literally had a mint during the break. I had two mints during the break trying to give us a transition. And also, like, something interesting just happened with Alejandro Villanueva. And he was the guy that was the lone Steeler who was outstanding for the anthem. He just talked about it. It was very interesting. It's very good. And his response is stupendous. And it goes a lot of different ways. And we're going to save it until tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to spend an hour and a half on it, but... No, we're saving it till tomorrow, though. The Chiefs did play a football game yesterday, so that's good. They won that game.
Did?
They played a game and they won a game. They're now one of two undefeated teams left in football, 3-0 along with the Atlanta Falcons. There was good stuff and there's bad stuff. Admittedly, it feels kind of silly to be like, oh yes, sports game at this moment. But it's where we are. We're going to talk about that sports game. The Chiefs win, as I believe I mentioned. But it was a really weird, truly bizarre game. The final score says 24-10. It's not true. The game was 17-10 in its entirety. The game was over whenever Kareem Hunt busted through the first down marker on his 69-yard touchdown run. Nice. It was a 17-10 win with an extra touchdown on the end for some bonus buffering. Not that that really helped in Vegas either. Just like, it was just 7 extra points. It was 17-10 at halftime, and it was 17-10 at the final score for as I am concerned. Although I am here for, like, hashtag Kareem for MVP or whatever. Very much here for that. Rookie of the year, unanimously currently, I would imagine. But the offense was not good yesterday. The defense was really great. In fact, I did something very petty. I did something very petty today online.
What'd you do?
Well, so, you know, the Chiefs segments of this show, the Chiefs Hours or whatever, go up on Arrowhead Addict. And I wasn't sure that it had gotten posted, so I went to today to check to see if it did. And it did. And I clicked it, and I was like, oh, I wonder if this has any comments. And it had a bunch of comments. And somebody singled out the phrase that I said whenever I said, the pass defense has been good in Eric Berry's absence. And their comment was, the pass defense has been good in Eric Berry's absence? They're 29th in the league in pass defense. And they commented that before the Chargers game, obviously. And then in the Chargers game, they picked off Phillip Rivers 3 times, nearly a fourth. They gave up 10 points. So I just responded to that comment this morning and said, thanks, Tony. I don't know if his name was Tony. I think his name was Tony. I just responded with, thanks, Tony. The pass defense looked pretty good to me. Thanks for reading. And that was it. It was so petty. It was so
unbelievable.
It was so small. I was such a child, and I would do it again. There was some crazy stuff in the comments. I try to avoid the comment section on Arrowhead Addict, just because there can be some really, really ferocious stuff in there. No one ever listens to the podcast. They just like read the headline. They're like, oh, what a dope. But someone was like, I don't know if it any position other than quarterback, the Chiefs are a better offense than the Broncos. And I had the whole thing on Friday about how the Chiefs, like the Broncos beat the Chargers with their offense on their worst day. And God, I was so right about this. Can we unveil the new trumpets? Get me those beards. Hold on. You'll know when I'm done. I said on Friday, I said the Broncos beat the Chargers in week one. And I'm pretty sure that the Broncos offense in week one is pretty much the worst case scenario offensively for the Chiefs. So I said that even if the Chiefs had a bad offensive day, I think they would still win by still being as good as the Broncos on their best day. And oh my God, I nailed it! Boom. Crushed it. I mean, yeah, the offense wasn't good yesterday. I'm watching now. I'm distracted by my own face on the the Facebook Live video, and it's
you
incredible.
Were soaking it in.
It's incredible. It is so good.
You were glowing.
It is so good. RJ says that Surface stat readers are the worst, and they are. But like, there's a combination. Happy medium somewhere. This guy was not have it. But like, yeah, my things going in were like, yeah, I think that the offense, even if it has a bad day, will still win this game, and I think the pass defense versus Phillip Rivers is a good matchup, and also that the team will deal with Melvin Gordon just fine. Melvin Gordon had a really nice first half. He ended up with the game having 79 yards on 17 carries. Worked out. Chargers offense was thoroughly handled. And again, the comment section was just littered with people like crushing the Chiefs defense for some reason. So the Chiefs defense would be like the Broncos defense if everybody except for Von Miller was hurt. Or like some, it was bizarre. It was really bizarre. Because they lost Eric Berry and I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Some of y'all don't make sense. But what actually happened yesterday is kind of a tale of two units. Now, there was a whole lot of that bend-don't-break thing with the defense, and they still, it felt like a bend-don't-break performance from the defense, even while ending up with three interceptions from Phillip Rivers. In reality, I think that's probably me having a little bit of my eyes lying to me a little bit, because it seemed like the Chargers had so many more possessions than the Chiefs did. And they that pans out, actually. I don't know the exact number. I'll try to figure it out. But like right now, the Chargers had 26 team carries. The Chiefs had 25 team carries. Alex Smith threw the ball 21 times. Phillip Rivers threw it 40 times. So it was a bend-don't-break effort from the Chiefs defense, largely because they could not get off the field. The offense was not good. It was good enough for a win, not good enough for them to actually be achieving what they should be achieving. The offense was dumpster juice. There was very little pass rush until late in the game. Third downs were not converted. Penalties were had en masse. Kareem Hunt didn't get enough touches whenever the offense was sputtering. And they still win the game by the final score by 14 points. In reality, by a touchdown.
Two interesting stats I just pulled up here on the box score.
Okay.
Time of possession.
Yeah.
Kansas City had it for 30 minutes and 26 seconds.
Huh.
LA had it for 29:34.
They ran way fewer plays, though, right? Do you have that? I'll look at it.
I can find that, but total yards, LA had 29 more. Or no, 19 more.
Yeah,
311
versus
330.
Also, on that same thing, and I have the plays also here, Beard, so thank you for guiding me.
I see it, too.
The Chiefs had fewer yards than the Chargers did, partially because they were dealing with shorter field, because Phillip Rivers was throwing the ball away. But the Chiefs undercut themselves even more, 13 penalties for 122 yards, exactly double how many penalty yards the Chargers had, 61. Also, yeah, and that is super interesting, the time of possession was split as close to 30 and 30 as you can get it.
It was pretty close.
But the Chiefs ran 17 fewer plays than the Chargers did, which I find interesting. I don't know exactly what that means, but I find that interesting. And they're not moving very quickly offensively, which is kind of bizarre.
LA also had 8 more first downs,
which also makes sense. But the third down efficiency was very similar: 4 for 12 for the Chiefs, 5 for 13 for the Chargers. It was kind of an evenly matched game of offenses, if that makes any sense. The Chargers were being forced into turnovers, and for the pass rush that was getting to Phillip Rivers happened early when he was throwing the pick, and then at the end when Justin Houston got to him, but he had some time. Rivers was sloppy. The Chargers offense was being thoroughly challenged very, very well by the Chiefs defense, and the Chiefs offense was being bad. So it was a tale of two relatively similarly outputting offenses up until Kareem Hunt busted one at the end. I think it was all 17 of the Chiefs' first half points came directly off of Phillip Rivers' turnovers. That's a good way to win a good way to win a bad game. That is not a good way to plan to win, if that makes sense. I'm not going to try to convince you that the Chiefs are 2-1. I'm going to try to convince you they won that game 17-10 and not 24-10. But I'm not going to try to convince you that they're 2-1. They won the game. They did what they needed to do there. But it was not necessarily how you would have scripted it, which is how the NFL works sometimes.
Yes, all of the scores, both touchdowns in the first half came off of interceptions.
Okay. And I know that the field goal came after eventually Santos was roughed and got the second shot at it. I can't remember if it was after the
third game. Was after an interception as well.
Booyah! All right. So all 17 of the Chiefs' points throughout the first half came off of Phillip Rivers' turnovers, and then get the huge 69-yard touchdown run by Kareem Hunt. At the end, it was not a good offensive performance. It was good enough for a win, but that's not really how I want to evaluate things. because I can tell you that the Colts were good enough to win yesterday. I can tell you the Vikings were good enough to win. I can tell you that the Jets were good enough to win yesterday. The Rams were good enough to win on Thursday. The Jags were good enough to win. The Falcons were good enough to win yesterday because they did win. But on the one-inch line, they're an inch away from losing yesterday. The Eagles were good enough to win, but barely held on against a rough-looking Giants team. So I'm not here to tell you who won, because you know. I want to figure out what went wrong, what went well. Alex Smith was 16 for 21. I get choked up just thinking about him. Alex Smith was 16 for 21 for 155 yards and two touchdowns. But I think that you can really remember his day thoroughly in two plays. And I'm open to being corrected if I'm wrong, I suppose. I distinctly remember two plays from Alex Smith yesterday. Touchdown throw to Tyreek Hill, missed deep shot to Tyreek Hill. In fact, touchdown the hill, missed touchdown the hill, if you want to be ever so bold. He had the post route to Tyreek Hill that traveled, what, 25, 30 yards in the air? The best offensive play of the day, at least until Kareem Hunt changed that in garbage time. Garbage time is strong. I digress. It was the most impactful offensive play of the day. And it was Tyreek Hill wide open. Somehow, like, I think dealing with a linebacker trying to cover him. Easy touchdown. Booyah. That's money. You got to have those. You got to have those. Smith gave it to you. Good job. I'm not here to trash Alex Smith. My mentions. So he delivered that one. And then they took the deep shot to Tyreek Hill down the left sideline later on. And it was underthrown and thrown out of bounds. Not a good throw. If that throw is on target, it's either a huge gain or in all likelihood a touchdown. Because Tyreek Hill beat his guy. By the way, like Rich Gannon also said this during the broadcast. That's just a miss. He just missed him. He just missed him and probably missed a touchdown. So Alex Smith had a good throw to an open receiver and a bad throw to an open receiver. That's okay. I mean, that's kind of what it is. And this is something that Keen Fahey, whose name might actually be Cian Fahey or any mixture of the two, and God, I try so hard to get that right, and I just am going to get it wrong every time.
Let's just call him Joe.
Connor McFootball. Bob. Connor McFootball is what Lebatard was calling him for a long time. Keen...
Johnny Football?
No. God. Pierce, please. Stay in your cave. Keen said that he's never had a problem with Alex Smith as an actual deep ball thrower. He's had a problem with his hesitance to do so. The Chiefs only did it twice yesterday, largely can be attributed to the fact that Alex Smith was under pressure for a huge part of the day. But you've got to do some things there to get yourself some time. You've got to make that team respect the deep ball so they can't bring so much pressure. You've got to have them respect the intermediate pass to Travis Kelce so they have something else to cover. Travis Kelce was a ghost yesterday. One catch, 1 yard. One target. Also, according to ESPN's box score, his longest reception was for 1 yard, which makes sense. He was a ghost yesterday. Here are receivers on this team who had more yards than Travis Kelce yesterday. Tyreek Hill, Albert Wilson, DeAnthony Thomas, Dre Kendrick West, Anthony Sherman, Kareem Hunt, DeMarcus Robinson. J.U. Chesson was not active for the game, and he had one fewer yard than Travis Kelce did. That's no good. And I'm waiting for someone better at watching film than me to tell me what happened to Travis Kelce yesterday. Because either the Chargers were taking him away, or they were doing enough to keep Alex Smith and Andy Reid skittish.
There was somebody on the postgame show yesterday that thought of the idea that that was kind of Kelce's punishment from the week before.
Yeah. So I heard that, and I think that's interesting. But not interesting. It's like, maybe. It's like, that's an interesting thought. But no.
Andy Reid, that would be a little weird just to kind of have him out there just to do nothing.
Yeah, like, hey, Travis, I know how much you like catching the ball. Go block for a whole game. That's your punishment.
Also, it'll take away one of our weapons.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know what Andy Reid? I'm sure Andy Reid likes having a team that respects him and a team that doesn't act out and doesn't get personal foul penalties. You know what Andy Reid likes more than that? winning football games, especially in winnable situations on the road against a division rival. Man, you got to have that. Like, eventually, the Chiefs are probably going to have to win a couple games they shouldn't win or they wouldn't be favored in. And there might only be actually really two or three of those this whole season. But you've definitely got to keep hold of the games you should be winning. You should be that you are favored in. You've got to hold on to those. You're not going to risk Travis Kelce. You're not going to risk the game by disciplining Travis Kelce in a way that you're simply letting him on the field but not getting targets. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't buy that theory. He just was not around. He just disappeared. The penalty situation is bizarre. I mentioned that already, but I don't really... like. If they were the Raiders, we would be going like, oh, what an undisciplined team. Silver and black. It's come back to them. And that is just bizarre to me. D Ford left the game with a hip injury. The pass rush was having a hard time. D Ford's always having a hard time in the run game. Although we had a couple of nice plays yesterday, actually. But he ends up leaving with a hip injury, so it's Justin Houston and Frank Zombo out there because Tom Bahali's on the pup list. Tano Passanio, I think, got on the field whenever the game was essentially over already. But that was it, not before. Yesterday was a story to me, and we can go through some specifics of it if you want. You can comment on Facebook. I'll check the comments during the commercial break. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe, takeaways, questions, concerns, whatever with the Chiefs. And if you listen to this on the podcast later on, you can do the same thing. You can tweet me and we'll grab some of that and use it for tomorrow's show. But yesterday, in a couple of sentences for me, is that good teams win bad games. Yesterday was a bad game. The Chiefs are a good team. It's relatively straightforward. It was an ugly game. The Patriots won an ugly game yesterday. The Falcons won an ugly game yesterday. The Steelers lost an ugly game yesterday. Who has the real problem from those teams? Well, the team that lost, obviously. So there definitely is an amount of, got out with the win, so Sunday was a good day. I'm okay with that. To a point. I'm okay with that if it takes you to a place of, listen, we had just, as long as we evaluate this through the prism of they did enough to win, then I'm cool with it. If you use that to say, we can't criticize this team, they were perfect. Well, that's simply not true. I just saw the Tyreek Hill touchdown. Yeah, that ball traveled probably 35 yards in the air. It was a very nice throw. Alex had a really nice throw and a crummy one. Phillip Rivers had like 7 crummy ones.
All of them.
Hold on. Phillip Rivers had, 500. He had 20 throws that were okay, and 20 throws that were garbage. That's an overreaction, but he was 20 for 40 on the day.
Some of those throws probably weren't any good.
That was
our overreaction.
I'm sure. But like, that's what the games like this absolutely happen. I'm not gonna fight that. Again, the Patriots, Chiefs, and Falcons, who I argue are the three teams in the league most worthy of your respect right now. Maybe throw in the Packers. But the Chiefs, Falcons, and Patriots all won close, gross games yesterday. Close and gross. Those count. That works. They did what they needed to. However, lots of places to improve. The third down conversion thing was disastrous. I do not think it's a coincidence that they went, 4 for 12 on third downs, and worse earlier on in the game. They picked up a few later. They were struggling to pick up third down conversions. Travis Kelce had one reception. That is not a coincidence. Tyreek Hill ended up with 77 yards receiving in that touchdown, but I felt very assuredly that he could have been used more in that game. I know you don't want to bang up Kareem Hunt before you get to the playoffs. I'm sorry. Carson Palmer just arrived at the game tonight in an inflatable unicorn costume.
I saw that.
What the hell?
That was amazing.
Am I doing meth or was that
no,
on
that
TV?
Actually happened.
Are you also doing meth?
Maybe.
Welcome to Almost Entirely Meth.
What?
My favorite thing that happened there was I was watching the TV waiting to see more Carson Palmer in a unicorn costume, and I heard, what? Click of the button to save that, and then Beards go, just so pleased with himself that he couldn't even turn off his microphone before he did all of that.
Just a little.
He left his microphone on to go, bah! Click. And then his microphone went off. Exactly. God, I had a point.
Blame Carson Palmer, not me.
Yeah, it really was Carson Palmer's fault. You don't want to, like, burn up Kareem Hunt. Totally get that. I'm on board with don't ruin Kareem Hunt. I get choked up just thinking about him. I'm going to, you know what? Bleep. We'll talk about Kareem Hunt when we get to the break. I'm going to go get a cup of water before I die in the studio.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Sam Bradford is to quarterbacking as Sam Bradford is to handsomeness.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Can you score with him? I think so.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I really love that line a lot. All right, two things happened during the break. First of all, Donald Trump tweeted again. Said, General John Kelly totally agrees with my stance on NFL players and the fact that they should not be disrespecting our flag or great country. Listen, Donald, I know you're listening. I know you eventually hit the podcast. I appreciate it. It means a lot. Please stop doubling down on this. I'm trying to stick to sports. You're making it so hard. I want to talk about Kareem Hunt so bad. And you're out here tweeting crazy stuff and capitalizing words strangely. I don't get it. I don't like it. Please stop.
Hey, Josh.
Yeah.
Should Kareem Hunt have stopped at the one?
No. I know Danny was saying, Klingscale was saying yesterday that he should have. Holy God, did you see that Darren Sproles tore his ACL and broke his arm on the same play? Oh, God, I just saw the play. Oh, God. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine that. I saw it, I forgot about it, and then I saw the play. I would die if I tore my ACL or broke my arm. I would die.
I don't think I've seen the actual play itself, but anything like that makes me reminds me of the Louisville kid from a few years ago.
Yes, Kevin Ware. Yes.
Gugh.
His arm was down by his knee, and a guy hit him like shoulder, like in the arm and knee. They were just tackling him. Whoa. Oh, that derailed this. I also want to talk about, there's a Renaissance Festival commercial right before this. And I went out there on Saturday. Had a jolly good time and everything. It was a specific thing that I think is amazing. It's called Vegetable Justice. And you pay $5 to get 5 tomatoes that you throw at this clown, but on the other side of a board. His head's sticking through and his hand is sticking through. It's a good concept on its own. But I've gone to the Renaissance Festival a few times. And the same guy has been there the last couple of times. He is straight up roasting everything around him. And I love it so much. Being like a sports talk radio show host used to be what I wanted to do with my life. Used to be very exciting to me. Now I want to be that guy.
You want
to
get pelted in the face with tomatoes?
I want to yell at little kids. I want to tell little kids that they suck. I want to tell kids they're adopted. That's what he's saying. You suck. You're adopted. Your mom's too hot for your dad. She's going to leave him soon. Get ready for it. Who do you like spending your weekends with better, your mom or your dad?
Wow.
Hey, dad, your tattoos look like they came from prison. Like, stuff like that was just like, whoof. At one point on the way out, a little kid was trying to hold it together. At one point on the way out, the best thing that happened wasn't even from the clown guy. On the way out when I was there, a little kid tried to throw some tomatoes, and the dad tried to, because he gets them mad and they spend money to try to hit him with a tomato. It's brilliant. And on the way out, the little kid, I don't know, maybe we'll say he's 9 years old, said, "Hey, Dad, can I flip him off?" And Dad said, "Yeah, whatever, bleep it." And he did. Little kid flips him off, and they walk away. Dad has just said, "Whatever, bleep it." And the clown guy's just like, "Wow, I'm getting flipped off a lot today." Like, and he just had like this screechy voice that just he's just roasting people. Sorry, Donald Trump keeps tweeting, and I'm trying to close it, but I need to know if anything interesting happened. So that's my dream job. eventually I'll get so good at sports radio that I can quit this and then go on to be a clown in a Renaissance festival.
Or we set up like a little gallows over here in the corner.
Yeah.
And we do it on the live stream. Like, we just have people come in.
That's good.
Little kids.
In
and
fact,
we'll do the show around that.
That's good. I'm into that. Or maybe we could work with promotions here. And, you know, this show's got to get a little bit, you know, a little bit bigger.
Or do, like, a dunk tank.
But it's basically, like, it's a dunk tank setup at, like, some, like, fundraiser or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But instead of a dunk tank, I'm behind a wall doing the thing with my head and hand stuck through the wooden door or whatever. And I'm just insulting people, getting them to give money to either this charity or, hopefully, me.
Our salary.
Right. Right. Salary. What does that even mean? Yeah, like, that just sounds like it'd be so much fun. I want to do that. And there are enough people. I mean, I could set one up in the hallway here and make some bank.
I've seen a couple, like, school groups tour here before. One of them was, like, elementary school kids.
No, I just mean, like, for Lebo.
Oh, okay.
Like, can you, like, there's so much room there. I'm not even going to say my jokes right now. I'm saving them. I got one that's very mean, and he would spend $5 to throw tomatoes at me, I think.
We gotta have like one preview one though, so come on, give us one.
I only have one right now.
Well, then let's have one of them.
No, I'm saving them all. I'm saving all of those. The problem is this ends up me getting fired also. Because if you're a clown at a Renaissance festival, you can insult people constantly. You can insult the guy who's in full plastic chainmail by himself. You can roast that guy. He'll give you $5, throw some tomatoes at you, whoop-de-doo. Game over. You can't really do that with people that you know.
Or work with.
Especially or work with.
Yeah.
Or work.
I can see the issue there.
Or beards work for.
Oh, okay.
That's even worse.
That's the best problem.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, you know, if, like, Cody walks by, I'd, you know.
He'd have fun with it.
There'd be a few things. Right.
Yeah. You can't really do that with Jeff Montgomery, one of the guys that own the station.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly.
Or Brian McRae.
For Cody, it could be like your daughter broke her leg on purpose so you'd pay attention to her. I can't tell Monty that, like, sorry, I don't remember you playing. I only watched the Royals whenever they were good. Like, that doesn't really, I can't really do that.
I mean, on the plus side, I think I've only seen Monty here once.
That's true. Like, Derek walks by. Like, hey, post-pubescent? Is that, that's the right one? See, this is, I'm bad at this. Hey, post-pubescent Caillou, what's up? Hit me in the face with a tomato for $5.
Do you have anything for Charlie since we're on the subject?
Hey, Charlie! No, over here. Over behind you, over here. Charlie, yeah, over here. Hit me with a tomato. Or I guess we could switch spaces, and if you get hit in the face with a tomato, your face will still be the same shade of red. Hello!
I hope he's listening.
Me too. I'll send him the podcast. There's a joke that he used that I would use for you beers that I can't say on the radio. I'll tell you in the break.
That's a shame.
God, I really wanted to talk about Kareem Hunt this segment. I guess we still can, right? Just a little adventure around it.
Hey, Josh.
What?
Is Kareem Hunt the MVP?
So far, like, I mean, who else would it be? You know, the MVP is going to be a quarterback. But is he the...
When is it not a quarterback?
Obvious rookie of the year, though, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. When was the last non-quarterback MVP?
I'll look it up.
Thank you. There was an amazing, amazing stat that came out from Pro Football Focus. These are the top five most elusive halfbacks in football this year with the Pro Football Focus grade. Minimum 33 attempts. Ready? 5-1 with their grade and where they are. Fifth, Jonathan Stewart with a 62.6 elusiveness rating. which is a runner's success beyond the point of being helped by his blockers. That's 62.6. Next up, Jordan Howard, 68.1. Next, Marshawn Lynch, 68.6. Next up, Chris Carson for the Seahawks, 72.5. Kareem Hunt, 158. By that ranking system, he is twice as elusive as the next best running back in the league this year. That's insane. The difference between 4 and 2 on this list is like 4.5 points. The difference from 2 and 1 is 84, 86, 85.5. There we go. Good math. It doesn't make sense. He's been so good this year. And this is something where we don't need the big trumpets, but like this is something that I was talking about back before the season. Whenever Spencer Ware got hurt, told you, Chiefs don't need a power back. They have Kareem Hunt. You've seen him? You've seen him run? He carries people. His balance, talked about this after the draft, is insane. He stays on his feet as well as anyone I've ever seen. We're through three games. He could blow out his knee. He could get figured out, whatever. But I see what he does, and I don't go, oh, well, that's going to come back to earth. Why would it? Why would you look at Kareem Hunt and say that that's going to get worse? It's shocking. And an absolute blast. Beard, did you have MVPs?
I do.
Hit me.
So the last MVP that was not a quarterback was Adrian Peterson.
Damn it, I was gonna guess that.
Actually, though, I kept looking on this list, and almost all of them are either quarterbacks or running backs.
Interesting.
The last non-quarterback running back was Lawrence Taylor in 1986.
Wow. Okay.
And even farther back, it's mostly quarterbacks or running backs. An odd defensive tackle, a place kicker.
Who was what?
Mark Mosley.
He's the MVP of the NFL?
The Associated Press MVP, yeah. In 1982.
What? What did he do that year?
I don't know.
Find out. That is startling.
It was a strike-shortened season.
Okay.
He's the only special teams player and only place kicker to win the award.
Grantland had an article here that said the year the NFL went insane and gave a kicker the MVP award. I didn't know this happened.
He made 20 of 21 field goals, was responsible for 76 points. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was a good kicker.
Interesting.
Wow. That's bizarre. Okay, didn't know that. Learn something every day around here. Bizarre. Anyway, the things that Kareem Hunt has been doing have been just incredible, and it seems like it's going to keep happening. Like, why would you believe that this isn't what next week's going to look like? Why would you think that next week he's going to flop or that he's going to slow down over the season as a whole? I don't get it. Just found out that my cough button has a short in it. The rest of the AFC West, by the way, aside from the Chiefs, did not have a good week, which means that the Chiefs did have a good week. Last night, Sunday Night Football, Washington and Oakland, I thought there was a really good chance of that game going the way that it did. Not that dramatically, but with Washington winning. I ended up taking Oakland, as I said, on Friday. But that's great. It's fantastic. Now, the Chiefs have Washington at home on Monday night this week, which is going to be simply a tremendous game. I can't wait to see that one. That matchup get paired up here. But the Raiders drop a game. Only good news for the Chiefs in dealing with the AFC West. And the Broncos, I tried to tell you, they were favored on the road. Like 93% of people or 94% of people on NFL or on ESPN's Pigskin Pick'em thing had the Broncos. Bills win by 10 points. Six of those in the fourth quarter. They were controlling throughout most of this game. It was tied at halftime, I guess, but through the second half, they sort of pulled away. Two interceptions from Trevor Siemian, the Broncos can't get anything going on the ground. Jamaal Charles leads the team in rushing, 9 carries, 56 yards, and a touchdown. And the Bills won with kind of an ugly offense and some sort of a team effort, you could say. But another tremendous thing there for the Chiefs. I'm not afraid of the Broncos. I've never been afraid of the Broncos. That has not changed. Did not change yesterday. But that's a game that I thought would end up going towards the upset, and it did. It's good news for the Chiefs. The Raiders thing is a bigger deal because the Raiders, as I said at the beginning of the year, I had the Chiefs and Raiders both going 10-6. That's not, I'm going to be wrong twice there probably. That's not two good but flawed teams. I also had two of those losses being week one and week three for the Chiefs, so that's good news. The Raiders have some favorable scheduling matchups. They also get the Chiefs at home in a couple of weeks on Thursday night, which is a huge advantage to the home team getting it on Thursday night football. So a huge, huge win for the Chiefs last night by way of Washington, and now the whole AFC West has taken a step down. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about, I don't know, something else.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Oh, all these virgin nerds.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
What? When did that? What did I? What? What is that from?
I don't remember exactly.
Oh my goodness. I think it was. Oh, it was Don LaGreca. I was. He was
oh,
in
that's
the
Pythagorean theorem.
And I was trying to say what he was
it
actually
saying. It doesn't need context,
saying.
Though. But out of context is better.
I needed context for myself. Because like, I know that I talk a lot. And I know that I've said a lot of things over the last month or whatever of this show, month and a half of this show existing. But I didn't think I'd gone completely senile yet. That is awesome. Welcome back to the show. All right, Beards, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a treat here.
Oh, boy.
Because I just saw a tweet that's now disappeared. Here it is. I saw a tweet with the worst shooting players in the last minute of the fourth quarter / overtime with a score within 3 points over the last 6 seasons. And 4 of the 3 worst shooters are Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, and Russell Westbrook, who are now all on the same team. This show has been so nuts. This weekend was so crazy that we haven't even talked about the fact that Carmelo Anthony got traded to the Thunder.
Can I have a small NBA tangent?
Beards is so jittery right now. Yeah, go.
So I thought, before the trade, I thought Oklahoma City was kind of in the good championship contending teams, but Golden State needed an injury for them to actually physically compete.
Right.
Because I thought Westbrook as number one, obviously, he's really good. Paul George as a second option, basically just turning into a 3-and-D player, would be freaking great.
Yeah.
And that was really awesome and scary.
Yeah.
Then they traded for Melo.
Yeah.
Westbrook is a prickly personality and is a notorious ball hog.
That's true.
Paul George is a pretty prickly personality and is also kind of a ball stopper a little bit.
Yeah.
Carmelo is a very prickly personality.
And a ball
and
black
is
hole.
The most notorious ball stopper in the league.
Well, I know it's kind of a tumultuous time right now in all the sports leagues, but I saw that the Thunder were going to petition Adam Silver to ask if they could play with 3 basketballs at a time. Has that gone anywhere? Is there any update on that yet?
They'll need that.
Holy man.
But in all seriousness, no. If Melo turns into Olympic Carmelo,
sure.
Makes then sense. That is exceptionally good.
Of course.
Because Olympic Carmelo scored like 40 points in 10 minutes.
Yeah. But you said you're going to make Russell Westbrook a 3-and-D player.
No, Paul George.
You're making Paul George a 3-and-D?
Paul George 3-and-D.
Got it. Okay. My point was going to stand, which is that now this entire team is going to be that. Or 3-and-no-D, perhaps.
In Carmelo's
Carmelo
case,
Anthony
yes.
is 3-and-no-D. Good luck.
Yeah, no, this will be fun.
It's super interesting.
It could legitimately go apocalyptically bad.
The off season for the NBA has been so fascinating.
It's been great.
So much good stuff. I'm not gonna say I don't care about the NBA because I care, but I'm not like I'm not you. Like you care about Game of Thrones and the NBA, and then like getting enough food and water to survive in that order.
Yeah.
I can't take my eyes off what's been happening in the league over these last couple of months. We haven't even talked about how Steph Curry refused an invitation to go to the White House, and then Donald Trump took it away.
And that kind of started off all this stuff.
We're saving it for tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Oh, hey, I'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, Beards is here now. Like, permanently is strong. We're all hanging on by a thread. But, yeah, Beards is like, again, full-time's not the right word either. Beards is every day Beards will be here running the whole operation, which is good because Beards is managing all of this chaos well. And we got some consistency, which is very nice. Charlie will hopefully be in on Tuesdays or Wednesdays and kind of like maybe like do some guest co-host sort of thing, a little Greg, yep. Be our local Greg Cody. Someone said we needed a local Greg Cody. And holy cow, go to SB Nation's Twitter account right now. Beards.
Oh, Hoodie Mellow in Oklahoma City? Yeah,
is
I saw
real?
It.
Did he actually put on a jersey over a
probably.
Hoodie? Hold on. Hold
yeah.
on.
Because I saw him in the press That's... conference and he was wearing a hoodie over his jersey.
Under his jersey.
Over under yeah. Whatever.
That's amazing. Wow. Hoodie Mellow, next level. Sorry for those of you who are promised the Chiefs podcast. I know you're gonna be mad. I asked for what else you were interested by and no one said anything. Oh, one thing that happened last night with Washington and Oakland, is you were watching, you know, the Chiefs' next opponent and the Chiefs' like most I don't know, worthy opponent, I suppose. And something really interesting was happening with Kirk Cousins. That offense looked really good against the Raiders' terrible, trash, garbage, dumpster juice defense. And it was doing it with screens. Kian Fahey tweeted that this was not even at the end of the game. This was, I think, in the fourth quarter. He said, with that screen, Kirk Cousins has 208 yards after the catch, 115 yards on screens. The Chiefs are going to have to spend a lot of time focusing on stopping that screen game. I think what's going to probably do is it's going to tear Justin Houston out of his pass rush role a little more often and manage that on his side of the field. But like Daniel Sorensen is going to be on screen watch, and I think they're going to be able to manage that. I thought it was pretty interesting. All right, listen, if you got to this point in this show today, I genuinely really appreciate it. We went to a lot of different places today, and I think this was a really good show. I'm really glad to have done this show, and I'm really glad to have had you listening to this show. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's the world we're living in right now, and I like talking about it because it's super interesting to me. If you made it this far, thank you for your time. We'll be back tomorrow from 4 to 6, every day, weekdays, 4 to 6. That's what Daily Radio Show does to you, and we'll talk about a whole bunch of stuff, including actual sports. And actual politics.
Almost.
It's all one thing! So exciting. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.